Hey, Scott, we sat a long time in the chairs, 20 hours, but no blisters because I was in my exoskin.
Were you wearing your exoskin?
Yes, I was, my second skin.
Boy, we are very happy that they were able to be a partner for the 20-hour streamcast. And it's just because they're such a good company. They make good gear, period.
Yep, and it makes a big difference. You're out there trying to endure the elements. Chad Wright, for instance, has run multiple days in the same socks without any feet issues because he's wearing the right materials.
Mark Cucuzella owns a running store. What does he wear?
Exoskin.
There's a reason why. He has been running for decades. And he could wear anything he wants. He wears exoskin. It's good stuff. It works. You need to try it. Go to our partners page. Click on the banner. There's a code there. You can get a discount. And you won't regret it.
Not only does it work, it looks good too, Scott. You know, you want to look good when you're out there because that's part of it. You need to look like you know how it's gonna go down.
If you watch the streamcast, you even know that they're hats. It's just a hat, but it looks good.
Yeah, we had a couple comments on that, and it is. You know, I could have wore the TRN hat, but I just liked wearing that exoskin hat.
Yeah, it has a little froggy on it. So yeah. Anyway, we appreciate exoskin and all that they do. They are a great partner. And we encourage you, you got to buy socks. Why not try exoskin socks?
The great toe socks as well. Much better than the other guys.
Much better.
Yeah. That's exoskin. Go to our partners page, click on the link, and you'll land in the exoskin store.
And it's exo for what reason, Don?
We think it's hugs and kisses, the X's and the O's, but we haven't confirmed that yet.
We need to confirm that.
We're pretty certain it is. And if it's not, I think they should adopt it.
Yeah.
Because it is your second skin. It gives hugs and kisses to the areas that sometimes can get a little angry when you're out there pushing.
Ultra Running Magazine. We love Ultra Running Magazine. In fact, we interviewed in our 20-hour streamcast prior to that. We interviewed John Mettinger,
yes,
who was once the publisher and knows so much about this community and this sport. Then he handed that off to Carl Hoagland and Erica Hoagland, and they've been running with it, and they have taken it to a whole new level. It's the Bible. It's the periodical of literature for an ultra runner.
Peer reviewed, no doubt. And if you want to look at coverage before Western States, if you want to look at it after Western States, they've got it from cover to cover. They know how to bring pictures, stories, and bring the trail to life.
They have race results, so you can see your name in the magazine if you run some of those races. They have really good educational articles, gear reviews, some of the latest gear, new gear that's on the market. Check them out. And must I forget?
You must.
I mustn't forget.
Yes.
Sorry. It are the photos. They have some of the best photographers that are working for Ultra Running Magazine. Color photos that, I mean, you could frame them, put them on your wall.
You know, the way photos are taken on iPhones and Androids these days, there are great photos from all kinds of people being submitted and fun to watch what other people are doing. And here's what Carl and Erica have done for us.
Yes.
We were supposed to, Scott, hand one free coupon out per hour for 20 hours. We had 20 of them. How many did we send out?
We sent, let me count, one, two, none.
None.
We forgot that we just got too busy with other things, juggling the bowling ball and the Jello, and we forgot to do it. But they're still nice. The codes are still valid. We're going to dream up the contest of contests and let you, the listener, get a free subscription.
Maybe
1 year subscription.
Maybe we should let the listeners dream up the contest, Scott.
Well,
if you have a suggestion on how we can give Erica and Carl's codes away,
yeah,
let us know. So, Ultra Running Magazine, don't wait for the code. Go out and get it. I'm sure they'll make it good for the next year. So, get it now. They can go to our partners page. Do we have a banner that clicks on and sends them over? People, do that. Go out there and get it and enjoy the magazine. Kick us off, AJW.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. This is Andy Jones Wilkins.
I'm Don Freeman.
And I'm Scott Warr. And we barely have rubbed the cement, which is a Tim Tweetmeyer-ism, rubbed the cement off of our eyes. We've gotten some rest. And now it's time to look back at the 2019 Western States 100.
In fact, some of this gear is still warm from the full 20 hours of recording.
There's still some bean dip, I think, on the panel here.
Hey,
did we have bean dip? Didn't have bean dip.
No, I wish if you had bean dip, you didn't share it with me.
We should have brought bean dip.
Hey, AJW, does it seem surreal? Like, did this really happen? Not just the podcast, but Western States 2019 had a lot of things going on, and here you are back in Arkansas at your new desk, at your new job, and just yesterday, a few breaths ago, we were out here doing this thing.
It's amazing. It's a little bit like a time warp, you know. But it does feel like it happened. It was a complete and total blur, and it was just another fantastic weekend out there. I don't even know where to start, other than it was just a lot of fun, and I'm already looking forward to 362 days from now to do it all again.
Oh, you're actually doing a countdown. Hey, so I know where to start. Let's start at the start line. Your predictions were quite strong. I mean, as we were watching the day roll out, you were just click, click, click. I got that one right. I got that one right. And you even had some surprises. So let's start at the start and kind of work through this thing and what stands out to you.
Well, I did get the top two guys right, and they both, Jim Walmsley and Jared Hazen, ran amazing races. And as I've said to a couple of people already, I really, really hope that Jared's effort doesn't get too overshadowed by Jim's incredible effort. I mean, 14:26 is just an outstanding time, the second fastest time in the history of the race, and may stand as the second fastest time in the history of the race for a while. So that's obviously a headline. You know, third place was Evans. I think that was not a surprise to some people. I wasn't sure how he was going to do. I didn't have him in my top three. I had Ryan Sands, but he ran solid and kept those front two guys honest. I thought a big surprise was Matt Daniels, really fast foot speed from the track. You might recall the 4-minute miler that we talked about in the pre-podcast, and then also one of my dark horse picks was Patrick Reagan, who found his way into the top 10, and my sentimental favorite of Mark Hammond found his way into fifth place, his fourth consecutive top 10. So there were some surprises on the men's side, but not too many.
Let's talk about the course and conditions, weather being a bit mild, and how that may have affected some of your predictions. For instance, Ian Sharman and Jeff Browning, who are usually there lurking behind, waiting for some of these obstacles like the heat to take guys down, and then they just slip past them because they just know how to take care of themselves. They're the multi-purpose vehicle that are equipped for the rough stuff.
Yeah, and it was as if the road never really got as rough as it does in other years, right? To use your analogy, and you typically with the heat and the wear and tear on your body, you get to Cal Street and beyond, and the road becomes a little bit more rutted, and some of the sports cars can't handle it, and so then you get the sport utility vehicle and plow up from behind. And I think the sports cars didn't really get roughed up as much. And so there wasn't as much carnage. Jeff was able to make his way into the top 10 with a fantastic ninth place finish. And Ian finished in one of his fastest times ever, and he was 15th. So go figure, you know. Yeah. It's just one of those things.
You know, speaking of the course conditions, this is the highest finish rate ever. Mm. 86.4% of the racers that towed the line finished. Only 50 drops, so 319 finishers. You know, the next closest that I can see real quick is back in 2011 and 2012, where there was 82.7%. So quite a substantial increase in the number of people that finished, and I think that weather played a huge part of that.
It certainly did, and And I think too, many particularly on the men's side, but also on the women's side, but also on the men's side, were frankly due to injury. Weren't your typical ran out of gas, had a stomach issue, but really injury that happened on the trail, whether that was Amanda Basham, Courtney DeWalter, Morgan Elliott, Dave Mackey. I mean, the actual injuries that brought them down. And then the rest were missed cutoffs. Well, unfortunately, Kyle Robidoux, the blind runner, mm-hmm. didn't make the cutoff at Red Star, and then others were missed. But 86% finishers rate, my gosh. That when you get the combination of really, really good conditions with the once-in-a-lifetime factor yeah. of people just wanting to finish this thing because it may be the only time they're there, and what it all adds up to is a 80% finish rate.
An interesting point that you make, the one time, the one chance to get it done. As Scott brought up the stats here that are on Western States website, we go back to the late 80s and early 90s, and we see that it's not uncommon here to have 54% finish rate, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. consistently. Yeah. So it says two things. It was easier to get in back then, and now there's a lot more knowledge, tribal knowledge yeah. that's passed forward to future runners. So they can have a successful go at it. Guys and gals were still learning back in the late 80s some of these ways to get past the cramping, et cetera.
And the requirements weren't as stiff. You could run a 50-miler and get into Western States. Okay. Now you have to run at least 100K, and it has to be a specific 100K. They go out and say, this is a qualifier. It couldn't just be anything.
Good
I think
point.
Back then it could be any 50-miler,
well, there was
as I
one
recall.
That was 50 miles downhill. It didn't matter, all on road. And we were not going to mention which race that is, but it was quite popular. And when they removed it, the race went away. So, you know,
that actually may be the race that I ran to qualify for Western States.
I think it was. I think letting this cat out of the bag, I think it was called Last Chance 50 Mile or something. This is your last chance. It was just.
No, that's not the one.
It wasn't it? Okay. Well, it was a race that was people used before they got in shape to qualify for states.
And I have to correct myself. This year was 86.1. There were 2 years in 1974 and 1976 where we had 100% finish rate where there was only one runner. So there. Let me stand corrected.
And that was that's a good correction and a fine, a minute detail. Okay, let's get back to the starting line and let's go over your picks for the women, the females, how that went down, and like you did with the men. I thought that was a nice recap.
Well, yeah. So on the women's side, I really and talk to you guys from the track when the winners were coming in. I think I, like many, many, many other people, thought that this was a year for Courtney DeWalter to repeat. So I picked her to win. And, you know, for 70-plus miles, she was on pace not only to win, but to break the course record. I had an opportunity to talk to via text to Kevin Schmidt, her husband, yesterday. I was checking in on Courtney because she ended up succumbing to a hip injury, and I have some experiences with hip injuries. So I was reaching out to Kevin to just see if there was anything I could do to help. And he talked a lot about their trip down to Cal Street in particular. I looked at her splits on Strava and she was just flying. And then right around Cal 2, mile 70, it just started an irritation and just it got to the point where it was really affecting her gait. She got to the river, tried to mitigate against it, and ended up making the right call up at Green Gate and dropping out, which of course opened up the floodgates for that chase pack that we'd seen all day. I did not, in my early picks, pick Claire Gallagher. I know many did, but she went on to win the race in grand style. I picked Caitlin Gerben to be in the top three. She was not. She had a dramatic sprint finish to finish sixth, so she did get another top 10. I did have Casey Lichtai in the spot that she ended up getting, third place, mm-hmm. and getting that spot with a person in her finish at Western States. She actually ran faster than the year she won, and also was one of the three women for the first time in the history of the race, three women all finishing under the 18-hour mark. And then Brittany Peterson was my dark horse, and as I've said many times already, ran a textbook veterans race. I was so impressed with her effort. And were it not for an incredible surge for Claire from the Pointed Rocks to No Hands, I think would have been a battle right to the finish line. But Claire just put the hammer down there, and it was a done deal. My sentimental favorite. Multiple time top 10 finisher, Eliza LaPierre. She gutted out a 23-hour finish. It was absolutely not her day. She felt relatively early on that it was not her day. I spent a little time with her at the finish line. She was not having a great time, but she got that race done. She put it in her back pocket. She's looking ahead. But man, that was a gutsy position. I think there are many examples. Casey a couple of years ago, Stephanie Howe Violette a couple of years ago. These are some great examples of women runners who've been in a place where they know it's not their day and they gut it out and finish anyway. That was Eliza this year.
Hey, guys, your content's so good, and we know exactly what you look like, AJW. Let's cut our video cameras so that we can have a better audio for the listeners. Okay, we're off. We still got you, AJW?
Okay, I turned my video off.
Awesome. So go ahead, Scott.
One of the other things that we mentioned during the streamcast that is frankly pretty amazing is in that women's race that 19 women all finished under 20 hours.
Wow.
And the 10th one was only 3 minutes over.
No. Sorry, I got to correct you. Nine women under 20.
I'm sorry. Nine. Nine finished under 20 hours, yeah. And that 10th one was only 3 minutes over the 20-hour mark.
You might recall in the midst of the streamcast, I got up and left, and I went to see Corinne Malcolm finish. She was a 20:03, got 10th place. She's a friend of mine. We coached together with CTS, and she charged from Forest Hill. I think she passed seven women from Forest Hill.
Hey, let's talk about some of your athletes, because you were coaching a group of athletes out there, one being Norbert, which was on our special interest story, a person that I had the chance to meet when I ran a race with him, and then ironically, you become his coach, and then we're able to reunite here in Auburn. So
yeah, I was really into our athletes in the race happened to be all male. Three of them were international athletes, which was just really great. And three of them were first timers. Another was running for the second time. I had Norbert Napich from Germany, from Bavaria, finished about 28:56, I believe. So under 29 hours, ran steady and consistent all day, did really succumb to trashed quads down the stretch as many do at Western States, but enjoyed the experience. And in fact, Bob Crowley, who as I think most listeners by now know, coordinates the Auburn, California effort to welcome in all the overseas runners. And there were over 80 overseas runners in the race this year. Bob identified pacers that would pace Norbert and the other international runners. And it was just great. Next, I had Neil from the UK, and he finished at 26 hours and change, really had a good time, not surprisingly from the UK. For him, it did not seem like it wasn't hot. While it wasn't typical Western States heat, it was certainly hot enough for someone who spends their time in the British Isles to feel a little bit heat there, especially sort of in the middle, late afternoon when this cloud cover dissipated. So Neil had a good effort, and then I had two guys get silver buckles. Karsten Meyer-Jacob from Germany, 23 and change. And then my one American runner, Evan Kimber, 22:20, which was a 5-hour improvement over his time in 2010. So I'm a very happy coach today.
Oh, yeah. And I would, I'll tell you, I spoke to Norbert after the race, or even before the race. It was he was commenting on what different condition his body was in. He felt more prepared for any race that he'd ever gone in based on the structured training. He said, I've never had anything structured for a race like this. Mm. And so hats off to you, AJW, for putting together what CTS brings to the table and your experience. So I imagine next year you'll have plenty of runners knocking on your door.
Well, I have to say too, Norbert, because he's a busy professional with a lot going on, spends a lot of time on the road, is in his late 40s. He was really restricted to 4 training days a week, and for 6 months. I mean, and 4 that's skinning a different cat to train for Western States on 4 training days a week. So obviously, we had a reality check about potential time goals and so forth, but you can do it on 4 training days a week. It averaged probably 8 to 10 hours up until May. And then May was, 10 to 12, maybe 2 weeks in the 15 to 18 hour range. And that was it. And he arrived at the line healthy, and he arrived at the finish line happy.
and you know, we talked to his pacer after the race was over. We met him at the international dinner also, but we talked to him after the race was over. And, you know, Norbert came into this race, I think, with the right attitude also. Mm-hmm. He was there to experience Western States. His pacer was a little anxious as they were going into aid station saying, come on, Norbert, let's go. And Norbert was saying, no, I want to have some of this food and some of this food. And, I think I'm going to sit down for a minute. And he was totally okay with that. That's what he wanted to do, was experience the race. And his pacer said it took a little while to get used to that, but then he realized what Norbert was doing, and they just embraced it and just finished the race.
I had that exact experience with Norbert at Michigan Bluff. He came through, he had a drop bag. He walked over and he sat down on a bench and he took his shoes off, not to change shoes, just took them off to kind of adjust his socks and get some of the grit out. And then he started just methodically taking things out of his drop bag and having a bite of food and sipping some water and looking at the other runners come by. He was being very deliberate with what he was doing. He was in no rush, but he was also doing what he needed to get it done. And you're so right. I mean, if you look at so many of the runners who succeed at Western States, they succeed because of their attitude. Mm. Whether they're front runners, like certainly you don't get a better attitude than that podium for the women. Claire, Brittany, and Casey. To the mid and back of the Packers with a great attitude. I mean, during that golden hour, I saw so many great attitudes coming into the track where they were just happy, like, finally, we're here. Let's savor this. You guys might remember that gentleman who came in and literally walked every step of the track. I mean, I found out later his quads were definitely trash, but that was his attitude. He's like, I'm here. I'm going to savor this now.
And he wasn't alone. He had his entire crew with him. Yeah. The pacer, he had a contingent coming marching to like a parade to that finish line.
And, something else,
and
yeah.
He was not in a hurry. I think you referred to him as the Pinkerton crew or something. I can't remember.
The Pinter. They had shirts that said the Pinter Posse.
Oh, that I was wondering where you got that term, because I didn't catch that. I thought, how does AJW know?
The Pinter Posse. Yeah, I never saw the Posse.
Hey, another special interest story, of course, Dave Mackey, and we talked to him before. We had a chance to interview him and had some pre-recorded stuff on there, and what an amazing athlete and a man with great heart, and inspires all of us. Walk us through a little bit of what transpired with Dave this year.
So toward even in the middle of the day when I saw Dave, I could tell he was grinding it out. He wasn't miserable by any stretch, but he was definitely grinding out the race. And then I got a report from the river crossing that he was still grinding it out. It was feeling rough. His quads were really beat up. Particularly badly going down Cal Street and to the river crossing, and between ALT, so mile 85, between ALT and the Corey Road, really in a heap of suffering. And ultimately, when he got to Corey Road, which I think, as most people know, is a aid station recently been taken over by Rogue Valley Runners, and Hal Kerner, a two-time champion of the race, was there. And I mean, one can imagine there's a two-time champion of the race and talking to one of the great, great warriors in the history of ultra marathon running. And Dave concluded on his own, from what I understand, that he did not have the muscular strength to continue. And it was quite frankly a safety risk, that his quads were in such bad shape that he was at risk of possibly falling off the trail, of doing some further damage to himself, possibly even others, possibly even putting his pacer at risk, that he just made the decision to call it a day.
And he had plenty of time. He was on a sub 24-hour yep. pace. It was, he was at what, mile 90-ish?
91.
It was not because of time. It was not because of giving up. It was, he felt, he knows himself pretty well. He's a physician's assistant. He's spent time in emergency rooms and other places. He knew that it was time to stop.
Yeah, I just wanted to go ahead.
And who can fault him? I mean, only Dave Mackey knows what it feels like in that body, mm-hmm. In that circumstance.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring the point that he was having a very fast day, a very accomplished yeah. day, and they just made a super decision to preserve opportunity for next time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Oh, okay. Anything else?
Yeah, I just wanted to, if you don't mind, just kind of an interesting thing. We have a friend, Don and I have a friend, Jeff Abel, that ran in 2005 and finished the race and found out, very close afterwards that he had cancer. He had run actually Western States with cancer and fought a good fight and ended up passing away. His wife, who started running after Jeff's passing, has become quite an ultra runner in her own right and took his bib number and started the race and ironically hit almost every split, almost per split as Jeff ran the race in 2005 and finished the race 3 minutes difference.
Gosh! Wow!
So I just got a shout out. She's a very strong runner, and we're really proud of her.
It just goes to show you that every bib has a story, you know, and whether it's a Dave Mackey comeback or a Andrea Abel, a mirror image of mm-hmm. Jeff. Every bib has a story, and none insignificant.
I got a story that we weren't tracking it earlier, but I learned of it at the finish line, and it was really incredible and kind of modern Western States type stuff. Clint Johnson was a guy I was following. As you might recall, Clint is from Georgia, and I got to know him when I was working an aid station at the Georgia Death Race. He was the last person off the wait list. He got pulled off the wait list on Friday, a few mm-hmm. hours before the pre-race meeting. He flew out here thinking, you never know, I might get pulled. And Tammy Massey, who is a multiple-time Western States finisher from Maryland, also was out here, and she was in the race, and she got a really, really bad case of bronchitis on Thursday. And was really contemplating whether she was going to run. I was not was worried about running and using an inhaler and whether that would put her at risk of other problems. And so ultimately, she decided to drop out of the race on Friday morning. And Clint got his spot. And wouldn't you know it, Tammy shows up at Pointed Rocks Aid Station, mile 94, to pace Clint in those last 6 miles.
Oh, how cool is that?
Absolutely. And it was funny. She said at the finish line, she's like, I almost feel like an organ donor.
Yeah. What organ did you donate? Oh, my bib.
Exactly.
Hey, you know, now here's my favorite part. And it was a surprise. And I think it's so cool that every bib does have a story like that. And you captured a lot of this at the golden hour. And it was a surprise because we didn't know this was going to happen. We didn't plan it. And we had the opportunity with Ethan Vosburgh, our electrical audiovisual
technical guru
savant. Yeah. He put it together so we could use Zoom on AJW's camera and do a live video feed with full AJW commentary on the last 30 minutes of the race. And it was the highlight of the whole 20 hours for me, of all 2019, of watching AJW pour passion as he's pulling that out of each runner coming through, looking at their face, looking at their body, and just absorbing that and then sharing it with us.
To give magnitude, 56 of the... I don't know how many finished. 56 people finished in that last hour. So if you look at the total 369 starters, 15% of the starters finished in that last hour.
And I said during, and we're not letting you talk yet, AJW. And I said,
he's on mute. Yeah. We've muted him.
That's good. And because he wasn't muted at the golden hour.
No, he was not.
And we barely got a word in edgewise. We had to somehow interrupt to even say anything. And it was like they were staged at the gate. This one comes through. It was a parade, a perfectly choreographed finish where I couldn't believe there wasn't any dead time. It was a runner comes in, he comes around, a runner comes in, she comes around, and it just made for not a lull in the entire emotional transition between each runner. AJW, go ahead. Give us a little.
Tell us your experience.
Well, I don't know where to start, but I have to say, it going all the way back to the first time I ran the race at Western States in 2001, I've been fascinated with the golden hour. Back then, I remember I went back to my hotel room, I washed up, I went and got a little bit of sleep, wandered back to the track. I was in awe of the fact that Scott Jurek and Ann Trason, who had won the race that year, were there cheering the runners in. And while there certainly weren't cell phone cameras and webcasts like there are now, there was, even 18 years ago, electricity around that hour. So every year since, every year I've been to the race, so 10 years as a runner, and then the rest of the time as a volunteer and a spectator, I've just savored and cherished that hour. So, you know, this year I took a nap. I was hoping to be in touch with you guys. You know, I saw the 24-hour people. I took a nap. I saw Norbert finish. And so remember, that was like 28:57. You guys said, this is for the guests, just to give listeners, just to give you an idea how real time and unscripted this was. I got the message, hey, find Norbert and interview him. And I was running all over the place at the finish line area looking for Norbert. Finally, someone said, I think he went back to his hotel room to get showered before the awards. And I was like, oh, crap. I was like, okay, well, hey, guys. And I texted you guys again, and I'm standing by the finish line, and the golden hour people are starting to come in. Mettinger has said, now we're in the golden hour, the best hour in ultra running. And then you said, hey, AJW, push on this little button on the left of your phone, the little picture of a camera. And of course, it took me like 5 minutes to find it. the button myself. I'm like, oh, I got it. And you said, push the little thing to turn it around. And there it was. And so I just started walking around. I was there for a couple finishers and showing all the photographers, and there's Craig and other members of the board giving out the buckles or the finishing medals. And I thought, I can't believe it. And I couldn't even know if, I didn't even know if you guys were hearing me talk, or I could barely hear you. And then it just kind of took on a life of its own. You know, we had this weird situation with the track being, the infield being torn up. So they were going in the opposite direction and they had that U-turn. So we could actually see the runners twice. They would come in through the gate. They would go down to the U-turn. They would turn back. We could get a view into their crews and their people with them. There was Craig Thornley and John Trent right there on the track. High five people. You guys, that was just amazing. Here's the race director and one of the most hardest working volunteers in the sport, just right there high fiving people. It was just electric. And Trayson walked by, Jeff Browning walked by, you know, and we're just all caught up in the moment as the drama is building towards the last few finishers. And then you guys, because you're good at this stuff, we're like drawing things out of me, like talking about the number of bridges that are on the course and how long do I think it'll take to get from the white bridge, and having to explain what the white bridge is, and talking about the 99th mile party, and all this stuff was just coming out of me. And then I hope it was caught on the tape, it wasn't too bad. Like I would have to hold my phone a little far away so I could yell and cheer for the runners.
Oh yeah.
In the middle of
that came out. That came out great. AJW. That was one of the best parts.
And, well, when I would get like cheer for the runners.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it was, talk about just a kind of go, you know, flying by the seat of our pants. I thought it was just so much fun for me. I mean, it was interesting because I would be doing all that stuff anyway. Right. But instead of talking to you guys, you know, in a normal year, someone would come up to me and be like, so AJW, how long you think it's going to take to come from the White Bridge? Instead, I was just talking to whoever was watching on the streamcast. So I don't know. It might be fun to do that again.
Oh, hey, absolutely. And, you know, the good news is we found out last night that the entire 20 hours is recorded and captured on the platform Twitch that we used, and your golden hour, we're going to take that out and wrap it up into a YouTube section so people can share in the excitement and see firsthand what the golden hour with AJW looks like standing on the track.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm looking forward to seeing that or not.
Well, Andy, I think what we've decided, you know, we haven't made a final decision, but instead of doing a 20 hour streamcast, we're going to do a golden hour streamcast. That's it. Just 1 hour.
Well, and to your point, you know, you have the race director and John Trent standing there in the best seat of the house, right near you at that last turn on the track. What better place to be? If you could be anywhere and you're the race director and a senior board member, where do you stand? Right there on the track, right where we're capturing, or you're capturing, this epic moment.
Yeah, I guess full disclosure though, I'm glad I didn't get in trouble. and the reason is this. I last year at the race, I had a press credential because I was doing work for I Run Far and other organizations, and I think that the race organization got a few complaints about that, because it looked as though to crews and other observers that maybe I was getting special treatment. And so I was very keen this year. I did not want a press credential. You guys know that because remember Bob Crowley was suggesting we all get press credentials, and I wanted to experience the race as a spectator. Now, of course, I'm on the track and I am a spectator, of course, like hundreds of others. I just happen to have my phone with me and I'm talking to you guys. So of course I didn't get in trouble for it. And I think it was that I didn't have a press credential. I didn't go anywhere I wasn't supposed to go. You know, I didn't go past any barriers. I didn't go inside the finish line area. I stayed outside the finish line with all the other spectators. So I was very sensitive to all that. And that's the beauty of it. You can experience this race just as a guy off the street, And it was really a lot of fun for me. So maybe we can work a little bit on the technology for next year, but yeah. I tell you what, if Ethan was able to make it happen, you know, within a couple of hours, right? We were talking about it, during the streamcast. Cause of course, when I called in about the dramatic women's finish, I didn't have video. I only had audio. I guess if the 20 hours is captured, then that's probably on there too, now that I'm thinking of it. And that means you probably caught me yelling and screaming about Casey's finish and Brittany's finish and Claire. So to hear that too, but I mean, could even be fun to figure out a way to get some of those things, filmed next year as well. So anyway, I'm talking too much, but man, you can tell the passion hasn't worn off yet.
Hey, AJW, I think what you might be surprised at as you watch your 30 minutes of coverage of the Golden Hour, when you see the part where you're not quite as hidden as you think, because you point the camera right to Craig Thornley, race director, and John Trent, and you say, "Hey, wave to the camera. This is Trail Runner Nation streamcast. Hey guys, how you doing?" So you weren't exactly hiding from them.
Oh man, I hope I don't get one of those emails.
Hey, one of the things that it was amazing is we were very fortunate to have a lot of people come by the aid station, and we pulled people in and interviewed them. There was a gentleman, and I hope you remember his name, Don. Mm-hmm. He started running.
Octavian.
Yeah, started running 30 days ago, about a month and a half ago, and came across the podcast and has been hooked. He has a long commute every day and got into our tribe. And so he came up to the aid station the night before, and we met him. We actually interviewed him on the streamcast.
Right.
And afterwards, I told him, I said, "You need to come back tomorrow morning between 10 and 11 and experience the Golden Hour." And he had no idea what that was. And I explained to him what it was. I said, "You need to come back. It won't disappoint." He brought his wife back. They went and watched it, and he came straight back to the aid station and thanked us. He said, "That was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had." His wife also said the same thing. She said, I didn't even know this thing existed.
So with Octavian joining the tribe, it just got a little bit tougher to get in the lottery next year at Western States.
But that's what it is, man. It's the Golden Hour. The race in as a whole has an electricity. It has a breathing life of itself. But that Golden Hour is magic. If you ever, you know, those times when you kind of have those tingling feelings, if you ever want to have that for 60 minutes, hey, come to the track.
AJW called that the feels. We learned about that.
Oh, that's right. The feels.
The feels. I didn't know what the feels were, AJW. Maybe you better clarify.
That definitely gives me the feels, for sure.
I think we started a new hashtag. Hashtag the feels.
See you in Squaw.
Hashtag the feels.
AJW, you're brilliant. I've said for so many years, yep, that if, you know, Wide World of Sports was covering our sport, that you would be well set for a year's salary just on that one performance, because you're just so, so good at what you do, and we benefit from it as a tribe, as an ultra running community. You're just very, very talented and good.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I mean, I wouldn't have this opportunity if it wasn't for you guys. And Don, you might recall, we were walking out of the lottery. It might have been as long as 10 years ago or 9 years ago. And you kind of sidled up to me. We had done a couple training runs together in the previous summer. And you told me you were thinking of starting this podcast, Trail Runner Nation, and, you know, would I be interested in coming on it sometime? And who knew, you know, back then that it would turn into this? I know I didn't, and I would suspect you didn't either. So, you know, what was hatched as a very, you know, sort of a humble idea in 2010 at the Western States Lottery has become a you know, a force in the trail running world. I mean, you guys have won awards.
Hey, AJW, that's so funny because we include that on the intro. I know you guys have won a couple of, we haven't won any awards, but the only award that we've won is the one that you have virtually handed to us on that intro. So thank you. And I knew it would, it could become something if we had someone like you. If it was up to Scott and I, we would have caught a toe early and skinned our nose and just been part of a short history. But good guests like you and Mark Cucuzella coming on during the streamcast and sharing just relevant information that related to the race and on and on and on, the 30 different guests that we had pre-recorded. Yeah. And we're not going to lose track of those. Those tapes, I hope, or those video clips, I hope we're able to rally and put together.
We still have those. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to have Ethan, the technical whiz, put these together. They are video clips and put them on our YouTube channel under some playlists. So you can go and capture that. Really, one of the... besides the 30-minute finish that you announced, Andy, is also the 2.5 hours of you and Tim Tweetmeyer going through each section of the course. That'll absolutely be there so that people that are future runners of Western States can glean some of the historic experiential knowledge that you two have and the knowledge of those core sections.
I was going to actually ask about that. A couple of people who I think tuned in through the 20 hours that I was chatting with at the award ceremony, they said, hey, I watched you and Tweet do these little blurbs on the course description. Are they ever going to become, could that ever become one big long thing? And so if it can, I think probably be really interested in it just because it's, you know, and there's some funny parts in it and there's, you know, telling stories in it, but it is a good description of the course from people. We've run it a combined 35 times, but we've also volunteered at it probably another 35 times. So we know a certain part of it and it was fun. You guys were asking just the right questions and getting us going about particular sections of the course. So I imagine that would be something that people would be interested in and, you know, would put in their headphones when they're in a training run for the race and try to put to memory, you know, certain sections, because it's true. Each year I talked to Jeff Browning about it, you know, each year, this year, you know, he had a few sections where he knew because the pace was so much faster, he knew he was going to have to run that section 5, 8, 10 minutes faster. And because he had that knowledge, he was able to say, okay, this is a part where I know it's a little bit smoother, where I know, it tends to be a little bit more difficult, probably stretch a little bit more and get through this faster. So certainly having that understanding of the course and the fact that, as we said at the outset, 280 people in this race were first timers or second timers. It helped. They can use all the help they can get in terms of what the course is going to bring them on race day.
And in addition, you know, Don mentioned we interviewed 30 icons in the race and in our community. Over 101 clips. We didn't get to all those. Mm. There are still a whole bunch. We thought that we would easily be able to play all those during the 20 hours.
Because our personal content was so strong. Is that what you're saying?
No, we just talked really slow.
We were getting a bit...
punchy?
Yeah.
But anyway, there's still some content that didn't make the streamcast. And we want to make all that available because these people donated their time and their knowledge, and it's just good stuff. Mm-hmm.
When you listen to John Vonhoff talking about how to fix your feet and what you should know when your runner comes in with an issue, what do you do? And those are some of the questions. And to get to listen to that is a real, real great opportunity.
So we'll let the nation know when we finally get this all produced and out. We'll probably make it available not only on the YouTube channel, but we'll make the audio available via podcast so you can listen on your podcast.
You're making stuff up as you're talking.
I after seeing Ethan do his thing, if I asked him, hey, Ethan, we want to go to Mars, I would want to be on his team.
Yeah,
because he could get us there.
If anybody's listening and they need a young audio video savant, this is Ethan. He is He is just natural at this and brilliant. And he's a junior right now.
Junior in high school.
Yeah. 6'5". And he's that tall because his brain is taking up most of that 6'5". He's a good,
it's
good
It's trickled down his spinal cord. It's that big.
I got a funny one little, another story in a bib thing. You know, I fill in for John Mettinger for a couple of hours at the announcer's booth between 5 and 7 a.m. And one of the runners I had the privilege of announcing around the track was Ethan's father, Scott Vosburgh.
Yes.
And I actually was able to say, since I had met Ethan all of about 3 hours earlier down at the aid station, that I met his son and his son is cheering for him. And it was really, really a lot of fun. And hey, Scott, Don, I got to call you out on this. You're blaming Scott for making up stuff as he goes along.
Yeah.
That's the whole history of this podcast.
Oh,
I mean, well, are you telling me that we didn't make up as we went along that golden hour broadcast?
how about this very podcast? We got on without one ounce of prep or
exactly.
Agenda.
And the other hashtag we invented over the course of the 20-hour podcast was hashtag no notes.
Because no notes.
We had Andy on initially on video as we started this podcast, and he's going through all these times and names and everything, and he doesn't have any notes.
Zero.
Didn't have any notes at all during the 20 hours. So it's pretty impressive.
But like I said, AJW, you still don't know what day the garbage goes out at your house, but you know every detail of Western States.
And believe me, my wife Shelley reminds me of that regularly. She's like, "How do you know how many bridges there are on the Western States courts, and you don't know that I asked you to get three things at the grocery store?"
Well, you know, that's fantastic, AJW. We thank you so much for helping bring this race to everyone. Without you, it would have fell quite short. You really raised the bar.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. And I know we have a lot of talking to do about what form this will take next year. But I imagine we can at least let the Trail Runner Nation know that some version of this will happen in 2020.
Oh, you're making this episode go along.
He's getting us to commit too.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why not. It's like running the 100 miles. It was a bad idea about 3/4 of the way through, and we got done, and it sounded like the best idea we ever had.
Yeah, and it was on some level successful, and it encourages us to see what we can do next time.
Marcy, Bob Crowley's wife, said, "Hey, you guys were still recording. Who said at the very end, 'Where's the hemorrhoid cream?'" That was you. That was you, Scott Ward. It was
that got caught?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I thought we were off the air when that happened.
Hey, so with that said, AJW, take us out. You took us in. You say run. You say run. We say
all right, everybody. Run,
Moss. Thanks, AJW.